Vivian Gunawardena, 30th of May 1967.
And I usually take things chronologically. In fact, I didn't know you were at the university. I was going to ask you what made you take an interest in politics.
Actually, I think it was a question of, normally you find in all families people who are a little rebellious and against accepted conventions and standards, particularly when you're born into a conservative family. And mine was. My father was extremely conservative. And therefore matters of various social customs and things. A person who's generally rebellious and known to be, say, mischievous and whatnot, you see. Such persons take to something that is opposed to the... So that is originally how it happened at home.
What did you study in university? Did that affect you?
No. By the time I went to the university, I was already interested in left politics.
Oh, I see. That's very, very unusual.
I was already interested in left politics because it so happened that I was able to, or really I came in touch with the group of people who came from England. That's particularly my uncle. My uncle, Mr. Philip Gunawardena.
And then of course there's Robert
And Robert too, who was at home always, of course, and we looked up to him always for defense in all these, you know, the no's and the don'ts that happened in our families, and he was older. So that always we referred to him.
Who is this?
My Uncle Robert.
Oh, he's there, isn't
he? He's younger than Philip, but he was a man at home.
Oh,
yes. He was never out to the islands. So that we in all our troubles used to run to him. So that when I had to come away from the university, my father thought I was making, linking up with people that he didn't like, their caste and things are concerned. They were very, very conservative on that. He took me away as soon as I got through my intern. And I was at London exam. Give you a degree certificate, it's a certificate to independence, and I'm not going to allow you to. So I said, we'll see about it. And I spent my entire time, all that I could, to study myself with all the London examination papers. And finally, actually, even to pay my fees, I had to pay through some friend of ours here. But it was Robert who assisted me in getting me that money. So that I was called and I was given my examination number and all that, my father was, the fate accompanied my father was concerned. And he just didn't object because mother was very strongly with me, defending me. My mother is Philip's sister.
Oh, I see.
So I happened to sit for my degree and get through. It was a general degree, economics, European history and English.
When you were in the university, you didn't join the Marxist study group?
No, there was the Marxist study group at the time we were in the university, actually. There was only the Suryamal movement. You know, that was a...
I know about that. Did you go out and...
I did at the school itself, college itself. At my school, I attended Mises College, Colombo. And there again, it was such a conservative school that you were not allowed even at the time to read the daily newspaper. I mean, it was so conservative. Today it's very opposite of that. Mm-hmm. It's sort of finishing school for ladies really today, where you teach even ladies how to mechanical processes of cars. And, I mean, it has come up to
yeah.
That.
That's why I was very interested in your, shall I say, interest in this field, because while it might have been expected for men to rebel against it,
yes.
for the Sinhalese women of that time, in particular, even for about 20 years after, it's very unusual for them to take to politics.
But it so happened, you know what is strange, that practically all the people, all the late girls who came into the political movement came from this college. It's rather peculiar, isn't it? Yes, this college, Edinburgh Rao's wife, Selina. She's from Mises College. Philip Gunawardena's wife, Kusuma Gunawardena.
Selina's original name?
Selina Pires.
Pires. Also then from Morotu, I
No, she's from Babinda. But she was at Mises College and she went to the university from Mises College. And she came from Mises College. Kusuma Gunawardena came from Mises College. I came from Mises College. Then one of my aunts, who is married to Anthony Pillay, who is now
in Madras.
In Madras. She came from Mises College. So that originally, and I could even see the other people. hardly...
Well, there were hardly any who...
Hardly any.
Anybody else at that period.
At that period. And we all came from that school. I don't know whether it was a thorough conservatism of the school that could have. Thoroughly loyal. I know my first attitude was that we must have even D.B. Jatlaka as, the undisputed ruler of Ceylon, sort of, you know, the desire to be free and independent, such that we must have got into, I should say, the infected to a big extent by the Indian movement and reading about Satyagraha and Gandhi and, you know, Swadeshi.
Did you read much about it?
Read quite a lot.
In the newspapers or in books?
In. Not only, this is not about, only at home, of course, that you read anything. But from the schools, there was absolutely nothing excepting all the classical books like Dickens and all these things in the libraries, and nothing modern or anything like that. And we had a master, too, who was addressed from the outside world in a sense. He's Harsha's father, who died very late.
Harsha, I know him quite well.
Harsha's father. You see? He was also quite a progressive.
Was he?
Yes, much more than he is today, I believe.
Was he in the CNC?
What is that?
National Congress?
I don't think he was in politics at the time. I think he was in the same group as this, Vernon Gunasekara and these young people in this, what we call it, Youth League.
Columbus South.
So, we were of course far below that in age group at the time. So. We were not members of that. But we used to participate fully in the Suryamal movement. I know that I organized the entire Suryamal movement in school. So much so
in
that... So that thereafter, of course, we went out. Once we were able to get out of school, we went out and sold papusas on the street. And therefore, we organized it fully as an anti-imperialist, anti-war movement. And excepting the staff, hardly anyone bought that poppy. I mean, we organized it so well, besides the... Because...
Hardly anyone... Ah, yes, bought
this,
the
copy.
They bought the school.
Yeah, that's, they had students, I can say. But of course, the staff and all that day, the copy movement was there. But our attitude of, you know, opposition, I suppose, was such that I remember we organized even noise for that 10 minutes, you know, that you stand up for 3 minutes or 4 minutes for silence to sort of cooperate with the rest of the people thinking of time. We used to make, put instrument boxes on top of these boards, notice boards, and push it with our fingers so that. Just at that moment when the bell rings, the sound, you know, the government sounds that...
Like an air raid.
Yeah, warning for that signal for the non, you know, standing and wherever you are, you have to get up and be silent. We used to make the most noise.
With regard to home background, I suppose in terms of class, it would have been, you would call it upper middle or just sort of middle class?
I would call it, you know, it was a professional person's home in the sense my father was a doctor.
A doctor?
A doctor. And a British, medical, it's not an Ayurvedic physician, but a doctor. And as such, though it was an upper middle class family, we got used to, you know, mixing up with people and had a different attitude towards an as a person, and I should say the normal on a person in our status.
Mm-hmm. Did you speak Sinhalese or English at home?
That's a very peculiar thing. We have never spoken English in English to my mother, and we have never spoken in Sinhalese to our father. It's very strange that he never spoke to us in Sinhalese. And neither have I ever heard him talking to my mother in Singapore. Maybe that's, most of the time we were in boarding, and my father was being transferred from Pillar to Post in the sense of being a doctor. So that sometimes we are in Port of Havana, sometimes down in Martha, sometimes down in Sissa, sometimes like that a whole round, so that we go there only for the holidays. And once we grew up, we didn't even go for that, we used to go to Phillips, because we had lots of aunts and big household, and gregarious instinct of all the young people getting together with country life where you had those streams and the swimming and was not always made us get there for the holidays. So that, but we never spoke in Sinhalese to our mother, in English to our mother. Never spoke in Sinhalese to our father. So it was rather a peculiar thing. But mother used to always make us read the Sinhalese newspapers every Sunday. The single about there was one of the people that we
But isn't that rather unusual, even among the leaders of the Marxist movement, apart from Robert Tensley, weren't others?
Not Colby.
Oh.
Not Colby. But certainly, not any.
Oh.
Tensley is the only one who would have been like that.
What?
That sort of upper middle class family. Only Leslie would be. But not
in No, I was thinking in terms not of class, but more in terms of westernization.
No, no. You don't find now, even as much as Colvin's family, I don't think you would find that in any westernization. I think it's NN's, that crowd only that got into you know, professions, and earlier they were businessmen and that type of thing.
So they had rural and Sinhalese roots.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Completely. The only person whom I could take away from that would be Leslie, because at 17 or 18 he went abroad.
Vernon
too, no. Vernon also came from a sort of a middle class background with more westernized roots, because that's as far as I knew him.
I mean, I knew him
right from the start, from my student days.
No, one of the criticisms has of the Marxist movement, looking at it in over 20-25 years, has been that it has been too much of an urban intelligentsia.
No, that is, I think, more or less a very late phenomenon, in the sense of when really the parties got themselves organized on what you call communist principles of organization, where you based yourself entirely on the proletariat in alliance with the peasantry, that sort of theoretical Marxist approach. And then you had a very much more tightly knit party.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually it became, it moved away from its earlier beginning of 1935 and 36, 37, 38. It's really a post-war phenomenon. That going away of the Marxist movement, urban ideology and linking itself more with the urban classes.
And
was a post-war, post-Second World War phenomenon.
And even in, say, Colvin's and NM's case, with once they became settled in Colombo, I presume, with their, I mean, especially in Colvin's case, it is legal work, perhaps, they became...
No, I don't think it was a question of that. It was a question of that theoretical Marxist approach to organization. Because earlier, now, for instance, I remember very well when I was a student, not even entered the university. I was at home, and I knew the LSSP had just been formed.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I remember taking forms and, you know, going to the village and telling them entirely this equality, absolutely nothing else, no question of any Marxist definitions of anything. You see. I mean, I suppose I was also myself not that far.
Not
mature. So I used to say something. And so that when I used to say, you know, you subscribe to the freedom, equality, don't believe in caste distinction, caste differences. You see? That, how is it you are early today? This is Dodo's brother. Dodo Roberts, you know him.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the same son as you.
Yeah. So I would say that that was the moving away from really what I should say is peasant and that mass contact. But earlier when it started out, it was a completely the first and only anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist movement that took up all social disabilities, oppression, administrative and otherwise, functions. So we brought all that, where membership also was not that restricted to the Marxist
train.
In Marxism, I mean, Lenin has this thing for an organization which you have to do certain political work and pay a certain contribution and various definitions of who a party member is. So those things may not exist then. Until the post-war, with one group shifting out and becoming the Communist Party and so on, and NSSP becoming, following the ideology of Trotsky, and becoming a Trotskyist or Marxist organization. Because then that we started this trend towards basing ourselves more and more on trade unionism and the working class, state as well as city.
Mm-hmm. So then in the early years, this is something I suspected, in the early years it is wrong to say that the Marxist group neglected the
certain
base.
Quite wrong. I think there was a tremendous amount of propaganda we did on behalf of the dissidents at the time. That is the time we opposed our party as such with two members in parliament, Philip and NM, and even Vicky. Opposed very strongly these columnists movements of Two Acres and a Cow.
Right.
Started by, because we wanted the ordinary peasant who is already having this paddy field, who comes out from the village straight into the paddy field.
Yeah.
This irrigation problem, this minor time, which we are doing today, so many years too late. Because we said commensurate with the tremendous amount of money you have to invest in a galloya and transplanting persons and people into a paddy area. Our criticism was that there is a good agricultural district because of Kalama, automatic flow. All these places where the peasant is suffering because it has either to depend on the water, rainwater, and all old tanks in the Chilawan and areas are choked up, not cleaned up. Give them their minor irrigation work.
Uh-huh.
And you can intensify agriculture there rather than, and that was a criticism which very often you find Mr. Jefferson like a meeting, saying, oh, you opposed our father's decisions to colonize these areas, and but since he colonized only that you had today's yield and harvest, and otherwise you would be facing like Bihar or something like that, tremendous lack of rice and staple food, and be more and more dependent on outside world. But actually, it was not a question of opposition to these colonization schemes as such, or that we advocated large-scale farms. Not for me. At that time, the links were very strong with the peasant of those people who really started on the basis of the malaria movement. You know, Suryamal being utilized for big treatment of, it cost us so many lives at that time. Almost 1 million or 2 million more than the normal usual death rate in this country due to malaria. It was a real vast holocaust. And the Suryamal movement funds were entirely devoted to going to the villages.
What were the main plans which, on which you based your appeal to the peasants?
At that time, land for the peasants. Land for the peasants. And relief of rural indebtedness. Land for the tiller of the farm. Those were the, actually we would have
been pasture too?
A pasture too. As a matter of fact, we had old leaflets where we said, we are the Kanabima, and, you know, I don't have them now, but I mean, I can remember big leaflets.
Mm-hmm.
We should that.
But wouldn't you say that in one sense, one of your major plans was also the anti-headman system?
Yeah, that's what I said, that we took all administrative oppression systems, caste, now for instance, what shall I call, feudal oppression in Barangoda, that group, that area.
Were you able to mention this quite openly?
Quite openly. Mm-hmm. But we had padri meetings, I mean in the sense of the established people of the country trying to stop our... Is there a letter from Kumu? Is there a letter from Kumu? Murder? What? Arrest? No, no, it's very interesting. Voilà. So then it's mostly interesting. So it's heating up. Good. Yes. You're not going to have a tea, not going to have a tea. No, 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 on the rack on, we have those generally those mold type of pillows. We don't really go down from the drain and then come down the street. Don't have that.
With regard to this appeal made to the peasantry, wasn't it confined to the time of the malaria epidemic and the 36 election?
Did 36 election, 47 election.
No, but in between, before the war, between 36 and 40, did you try to broaden this peasant base?
Yes. That's what I said, really, after 40 that we Maryland can came into party organization and then dropped all these.
So
in electoral connections with...
In normal non-election years, say between 36 and 40, how did you maintain this interest in the peasants?
We had youth league. The youth league was entirely something rural.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't mean that there should be youth, but I mean it was organization, it was sort of a wider group of people to come in, and through the youth leagues that you got the, and we had much more links with that. I mean, asking them to, we are trying to come back to it now in the sense of, in order to get them linked up with us. But at that time we were organizationally also, to a very great extent. That is how even Dr. Shiv Ganesh, for instance, if you talk to him, he has a very wide knowledge of education, as such, much more than what you should now normally expect from a doctor of medicine. Very much.
But was he all that active in the 1930s?
Yes.
Who was the inner core there, before you really joined? I know Gunwadna,
yes, Philip, mostly not more, so much Robert. Leslie, Philip, NM, Vicky, Vernon. I couldn't just start about there was much wider people like Robin Ratnam and
Terence
DeSilva. They remained in the party as such, but
when the more out of fringe,
out of fringe. But Terence was entirely devoted to his education and to a certain extent to the Gandhian philosophy of you know, Swadeshi and you got the Deshi only and sort of it.
What was Vimal Pereira's role?
He was not so much within the inner organized circus of the party. He was more or less all in fellow traveler, right along, fellow traveler type. But he was inherently, I mean, at that time, he was anti-imperialist. And broadly for a socialist synod. And linked himself up in practically all our election activities and meetings, propaganda meetings and all that. But I don't think he was ever in an organized fashion connected to that. As far as I know, I may not be.
Were members subject to some kind of test before they were accepted?
Then, as I told you, I used to take down to the village, quite a number of forms and say, here you are, you could get 25 cents and you are a member of the Lata Sattva party. But you must subscribe to the fact that you stand probably for socialism, that you are against British, British, in the sense standing for national independence, and so on. And you're against caste, and you stand for social equality.
Mm-hmm. This open anti-caste front, didn't it, in one sense, retard the movement in that it was...
No, it was not so much preached, in the sense of we are against caste or anything like that, but we had it in our program. I remember in our program, against caste.
I was wondering whether the conservatism of the peasantry and of the Goigam elements in particular would have...
No, I don't think it affected that too, because feudal and headman oppression was such that...
Yes?
Feudal and headman and all that oppression was such that all these other things, he had found a group of persons to whom the peasantry could take, I mean the rural people could take their troubles to police oppression anywhere, headman oppression anywhere, any type of social oppression like that or administrative. Straight up, it was only a son of a man to come to the forefront and gone against the headman, gone against police. So in that way, the other matter didn't create any sort of lack of confidence in us, in the sense that, look, they are trying to break. This is the way this fellow controls
Modulo
control. That also must be coming to that, I think.
No, that is not it. It can be.
Okay.
I was wondering whether this anti-headman front was a kind of appeal which lost its edge in that there were non-Marxists who made the same appeal, and also in that it was...
But actually there wasn't. There was nobody in any other movement except in the LSSP at the time, agitating against Hitler.
I think that George E.D. Silva.
George E.D. Silva also came later. We started against the whole system. We wanted the whole entire Mudaliar, Mohanram, that sort of, you know, the whole Kachari apparatus too.
But they did do something against it, and I wondered whether the fact that the headman's rank was reduced, status was reduced, later on...
As a result of that propaganda, definitely. As a result of that propaganda, really when Mr. Bandaranaike came in, he changed that and substituted his Dharmasevaka. And did away with the Mohanram and Mudaliar ranks. They were no longer given, and I suppose as a result of independence also, it was a 1947, post-1947 political independence. There was no economic independence, there was political independence. And from that time onwards, there was no more Mudaliars and no more Mohanrams. And Bandaranaike did away with the link closest to the people, that was the headman.
What sort of strata joined the movement in the
30s? Well, I would have been there from about 34, 35. Quite a number of people from universities came in at the time, much more than today, seriously. I mean, whoever we have came in, people who were students, I mean, who were not in the universities, but even upper class students then.
Law college.
Law college and things like that. See, much more than today. Today, today and for the last year, their interest in left politics is whilst they are in the university. Post.
When they drift away.
When they drift away into jobs and...
But then isn't this true too of, say, Esmond?
At least once, yeah, he was an active member of our party.
Yes, so that's true of him too.
Well, he came in at that time. Because, I mean, now that type of person is not so very common in our movement, in the sense of coming from those classes. Then they came in, I suppose, because today it is more a serious matter of contemplation. You take your side, you see. At that time it was something that was new and
romantic.
Yeah. And so that was also there. And we find now, once again, you find people, when they come in from the universities, coming with a little more seriousness once again.
If they do come. In fact, what are the connections between the university group and the Central Committee of the party?
I don't think there are any connections between the Central Committee, except in that if there is a local.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have our parties run on the basis of locals, area locals, factory locals, etc. You see, you can wish to be in the factory local or you can wish to be in the area local, one or the other. And in that way you have with your local, and therefore you may be having a... Not necessarily university local, you may be having a candy local. Depending on that, if you have a larger number of course, then you find a university local.
No, I was wondering whether you look to the university even now to produce some of the...
Yes, we do.
..top cards.
We do. We do.
And
we
keep
do
a special eye on them.
Yes, not only candy university, but the other universities too.
Mm-hmm.
Other universities like with Jodhir, Delankara.
No, I, as a lecturer, yes. I'm interested because I was wondering what sort of quality you find in them now. In terms of background and knowledge of Marxism.
Well, you see, they now I think you find people who have got the links to the village who are coming there.
Which is very useful in one sense. But
at the same time, you have to give them much more in the form of study classes for their understanding than in the past where you could read anything else.
Mm-hmm.
There is a dearth of literature, singly Marxist literature as such, for the university students anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We are hoping to. I mean, I know one of our chapters we want to take it as a Sarath Navana, for instance. I think he wants to make it very, very seriously. Navana.
Mm-hmm. What? Do the translation?
Yes, very seriously. He says because he feels that the university student is very badly handicapped as a result of the inability to understand the books of Lenin and Marx in the form that they are because it's in English. It was easy for the student of the past. And not so now. Now you've got to do that in the study class.
Now, one of the criticisms of the left movement has been, I suppose, especially in immediate post 4 years, has been that it has been very large English speaking, and that in fact it was caught napping by this language movement.
I don't think it was caught napping. I think it was a principle, it was a conscious, a very conscious
decision
where language was. A very conscious decision that was taken. And personally, my point of view differed. And as a good party member, I loyally abide. But I always try to fight it within the party. I still have rows with my husband. And I sort of feel we did not understand the revolutionary content in the single only propaganda and the fight for single only in this country.
Yeah.
And as such, we did something which had which was a tremendous setback to our movement in Ceylon and gave the position in the country to a middle party. A centrist party.
What do you mean by the revolutionary content? I think I know what you mean, but...
Revolutionary content meaning the Sinhalese majority in the country, completely Sinhalese educated, you see, did not find any outlet for economic or social development in the country, even though they were the majority race. Because the administration was entirely English. And if you wanted to get into the administrative service, it had to be on the basis of, to the lowest class of the administrative service, the clerical, you had to get only on the basis of English. And English was not taught in any one of those village schools or rural schools or even the secondary schools. So, therefore, when the Tamils, in proportion to the percentage, I mean, they are in the country, which is, they must be more than, not more than 20%, all included Indian as well as, they had got a disproportionate position in the administrative setup as a result of, which I call the divide and rule policy of Britain, which happens in every country. Whether it be Ceylon or India or anywhere. So that you had the missionary schools and English education being imparted to the ordinary lower middle class Jaffa Tamil person. And actually, as the laughing is saying, the Jaffna parent only produced his children to go into government service. So that naturally there was this element of antipathy and anger towards Tamil. Which I think was very, very, very used in the most blatant fashion by Philip and Dahanite during that particular time of language, where they tried to put it before the people as a question of, you see, tomorrow they'll be out and you'll be in, with Sinhalese as the administrative language.
This is around 55, 54.
55, 56.
What led Dahanite to leave the Samaj?
We checked him.
Why?
For instance, that's what I say, our party was now very tightly controlled and expected persons of the caliber and of the standing of position of Dahanayake in society, in country in general, as an MP, to abide by the decisions of the party. So that when there was a meeting, of a public meeting to be held in Goa, to which Dada Sen Naik as Prime Minister was going, we told him, he asked us, what do you say now, the Prime Minister, member of the United National Party, but the Prime Minister, the country is coming to Goa. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to boycott the meeting? Or? So we said, no, we don't want you to boycott the meeting because it is not just the party leader who's coming back, the Prime Minister. Therefore, you as an MP, you've got a right, according to the parliamentary setup. You've got the people expect you to place before the Prime Minister the needs of God. Therefore, it would be wrong on our part to ask you, even though you are a leading member of the Langa Sangha Party, to boycott that meeting. Participate in the meeting. Speak at the meeting. But don't preside at the meeting and don't be the, you know, the leading citizen that who meets the Prime Minister there. Because you are from a different party. Let that be done by the mayor of Goa. Who is really the citizen of Goa. But he had his own private feelings about not giving place to the first citizen, you see. And therefore he would not accept the dictates of the party. And the party decided by the meeting of the Central Committee to take disciplinary action against him, which was to expel him from the party.
Was he on the Central Committee?
He wasn't on the Central Committee. But you know, there are some MPs, the North of MPs who are not on the Central Committee of the party, but maybe they are expected to follow and accept a decision of the Central Committee.
Yes, of course.
And he was called up by the Politburo and the whole matter was explained to him. And he said, we are not asking you to boycott, we are not asking you not to speak at the meeting, we are only asking you as a member of opposition, not to greet. So let that be done by the, and there will be nothing wanting, there is no insult to the Prime Minister, which we would advise a person to even today.
Mm-hmm.
But he wouldn't. He had that. He is rather difficult also to organize his Hindi work with, you see.
He is
headstrong and has his own attitudes, which say that Philip. Philip is the same. Mm-hmm. Organizationally, I don't think anybody can work with him unless the organization is prepared to accept what he says. Both have those angularities, which none of the others have, like nobody, like NM doesn't have it, Corbyn doesn't have it, Leslie doesn't have it.
Isn't Corbyn somewhat like that in that...
No, very disciplined when the party orders it. Extremely disciplined.
No, I was thinking that he, with regard to theories, you know, he would be, even say Doric, wouldn't allow anybody to just to dominate.
No, but then you have to discuss. You put your point of view, you win your point of view. Now, for instance, entrance into the SLSP, for instance, is tactic. There was Doric and Colvin and Leslie, the whole set, all those people. They had their own views and they were partly opposed to it, because actually they were opposed to it, but because they wanted the whole ULF to...
That's in 65.
Yeah.
In fact,
so that we may have violent disagreements, but then if a central committee cannot decide, then we put it to the Congress in the party. And once the Congress takes it and takes a majority decision, which is not just a decision by two or three, but a definitive majority, then of course it has to be whether, now like as I told you on language, that I would normally, and I would have said, accept single only, and one Michael's provisions in order to give the Tamil language special provisions act, and insist that he puts implements it, rather than oppose it. But once the party takes a decision, I would be as militant as anybody who stood against it. Mm-hmm.
What led them to take the decision in 50, around 52, 53 on this issue, both language parity?
Not in 52, 53, it was in 55.
55, yes.
When Sir John.
On what grounds did those...
It was, as I told you, it was entirely on the grounds of Marxist dogma, in the sense of saying all minorities, the question of minority problem, there should be equality between races in a country, and there should not be discrimination between the majority and the minority. Excepting on that basis, there was no other sort of study of the subject involving all its implications and whatnot.
But
of course, it always stood against federalism, and even right up to now, whether we stand for single only or whatever it is, we are against federalism. Even then, when we were for parity of language, we were violently against federalism.
The
we were the only people who went across there and propagandized always against federalism.
when eventually you changed the decision, somewhere in the 60s, even then was there
no, argument? No, we changed the decision in 1963. In order to, after discussion, fashion it out, independently in our own party. Not merely a question of just discussions with Philip, but, you know, a process of give and take also, but a re-evaluation of the whole, evaluation of the whole thing.
No, was that decision taken by the Central Committee or by the Congress?
No, by the Congress. By the Congress. The ULF itself was a decision by the Congress.
And in fact, the 65 decision
was also a Congress decision. It couldn't be taken on the basis because the leadership was so violently divided.
Oh.
Divided. Even the entry into the SNLP coalition was a very, very violently fought out issue, on account of which the section of the party broke.
That's
Edmund and Carlo. Now Carlo is back, but Karal Singer and the vast section of the university group, they were back with the party.
Oh, Osmond also left, didn't
yeah.
he?
Osman didn't really leave.
He was away.
He was away at the time, and he came back, and then he, I think, though his feelings were with the so-called center group, as we call Leslie and them, who they were not with Edmund Samarkoddi and people, but they were for. Edmund and them were against any coalition with SLAP, and their attitude was that it was a feudal, whereas the other was a capitalist, even relatively a little more progressive than. Well, that sort of attitude, you see.
So there were some three groups.
And the three groups are voted for in the party. So it's...
The university group was against it, they didn't know that.
No, not all.
Was for.
No, middle group. The center group is mine. They were on this basis. We must go as the ULF. Not otherwise.
But didn't you, as a whole, feel that you had no special loyalty to the ULF because... Philip had been maneuvering on his own.
We didn't even take it in that point of view. We had discussions, and with NM, for instance, when he was originally asked by Mrs. Bandaranaike to come over, NM made it clear that he was discussing not as elitist, but as a UNF.
Through whom did Mrs. B put her feeler?
It is really not Mrs. B who put the feeler. It was T.B. Lagarajan, who originally started it. And then the discussions took place, and then Mrs. B wanted us through Ilangaratna to come and discuss it, and it happened in Aurelia, and then it came back here, actually. But I should say that it was Mrs. Bandaranaike originally was accepting the UNF. Actually accepting the UNF, not merely a question of NSSB, but did not want to give at that time ministries to the Communist Party. Rightly or wrong, she felt that she being a non-aligned person was therefore laying herself open to anybody who said that when the Communist Party is not a party that is completely a national party but has its international obligations, and therefore you cannot call yourself non-aligned. But that was not so with us or with Philip. And where Philip was concerned, she was very anxious to call him and give him a ministry, and had easily offered him either Ministry of Agriculture or even Ministry of Lands, as he wanted to, whatever he decided out of the two, Agriculture and Food or Agriculture and Lands, as he liked. But as I told you earlier, I always felt that whilst ambitions can be allowed in a movement, as long as it is consistent with aims of that movement, then it doesn't conflict. But if the ambitions are personal, at some stage, you've got to come into conflict with your movement. And that's what happened to him.
Yes, so what happened?
So Philip was not quite willing to hand over, as he felt, the leadership in this issue to the NSSP. Because it was Mrs. Bandaranaike was willing to give three ministries to the NSSP. Whereas in his group there wasn't anybody of that caliber, unlike other than he.
In fact, it has, by and large, deteriorated into a
one-man-woman sort of group, you see. And therefore, at that time also, there was no party as such. He used to dictate to the rest of them. So there are very good elements in his party at the time, already rank and file members, and I should say, university students, workers, and all that. But still where the intelligentsia was concerned, excepting Prince Gunasekhar, you see, and just one or two persons like that, there wasn't a... And then Mr. Bandaranaike, of course, recognized him. But Mr. Bandaranaike originally told NM, I'm ready to do this, but I'm not willing to give any speech to the Communist Party. And the Communist Party agreed.
And then?
And latterly, Philip used the Communist Party as a lever for himself. Said, you mustn't go in like that, you have to ask for it. If you do, and you insist. And that is how it...
And they held out for higher?
And they held out. So that we decided on our own. And we decided to go in as a...
Wasn't it T.V. Lagaratna who also knocked this scheme of a five-man junta on the
head? It is that which made him turn Mrs. Bandaranaike's mind away from that too. And Philip was upset about that too. Son, Sena rang you up.
No.
If you can, you can contact Sena now.
Yeah.
But otherwise, Sena wants you not to go out. So that any time, Mr. Victoria is packed.